4, Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. Australian police have arrested a man accused of working on the black market to sell missile components and coal on behalf of North Korea. The first charges ever brought in Australia over the sale of weapons of mass destruction. Reuters' Samantha Vadas reports.
Suspected by Australian police as a loyal agent of North Korea, this man is escorted from his Sydney home in handcuffs on Saturday, accused of working on the black market to sell missile components and coal on behalf of Pyongyang, said to be in breach of UN and Australian sanctions. The man is facing 6 charges, the first ever brought in Australia over the sale of weapons of mass destruction.
The charges that are being laid are of the gravest nature.
The suspect has been identified by local media as 59-year-old Chan Han Choi. He's reportedly been living in Australia for more than 30 years and is of Korean descent.
And in other news, 3 heavily armed suicide bombers Sunday attacked a crowded church in Quetta in southwestern Pakistan, killed at least 8 worshippers from a minority Christian community. They stormed the worship place of the minority Christian community. Pakistani security forces surrounded the site, but the heavily armed attackers met them with resistance. Witnesses said that 2 wanted to enter the main hall, where around 400 worshippers were attending Sunday service. But police guards at the main gate engaged the attackers, killing one of them and leading the second to blow himself up outside the hall. The provincial police chief told reporters a 3rd suspected gunman did manage to flee to a nearby residential area, and they were in pursuit. This is VOA News. The political party of Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas has called for angry protest during the visit to Jerusalem next week of U.S. Vice President Mike Pence. They announced Saturday that we call for angry protests at the entrances to Jerusalem and its Old City to coincide with the visit on Wednesday of U.S. Vice President Mike Pence and to protest against U.S. President Donald Trump's decision. President Trump angered Palestinians earlier this month when he announced that the United States would recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, reversing a delegate policy that has been in place for decades. Palestinian leaders reacted by canceling their plans to meet with Pence. He is still expected to meet with Israeli officials. A huge wildfire continues to ravage the area around Los Angeles in the state of California and is now deemed the 3rd largest in the state's history, with the burn damage eclipsing a devastating 2013 fire by more than 800 hectares. Emergency officials say that about 8,000 firefighters from a dozen states are in California to help battle those blazes with helicopters and bulldozers. The cost of the firefighting operation right now is as close as $89 million. Fire officials said Saturday that the Thomas Fire, which started in early December, has now burned nearly 105,000 hectares, leaving a footprint larger than some cities. Somalia's Prime Minister Hassan Ali Khaire said that his government has demanded the U.S. briefly suspend aid to much of Somalia's armed forces in an effort to improve transparency and accountability following corruption concerns. Speaking to reporters in Mogadishu Saturday, he blamed the former Somali government for U.S. concerns and corruption.
Getting good first-stage performance, the Soyuz delivering 930,000 pounds of thrust from those four.
Post-launch of the Soyuz MS-7 spacecraft carrying 3 new passengers to the International Space Station. This is to replace the 3 who are scheduled to return from there in April. The 3 replacements are from the U.S., Russia, and Japan. They are scheduled to dock with the International Space Station on Tuesday. They're taking a 2-day route instead of the usual 6-hour path because of the lab's position in space at the time of the launch. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
Ethiopia waged the war against its own people. And I could have loved that the stakeholders in the Northwest Harvest should be informed, should be involved, should meet the Secretary General for her to know from them what the situation is.
A Cameroonian opposition leader calls on the Secretary General of the Commonwealth to pressure the government to resolve the ongoing Anglophone crisis.
So going by this provision, then whatever regulation the law school will bring is null and void and of no effect, because it is in contravention of the right, fundamental right to practice religion.
Nigerian law school authorities generate controversy after refusing to call to the bar a hijab-wearing lawyer.
These are the SPLA soldiers, they fought for liberation, and therefore they are within the leadership of the Sudan People's Liberation Army. We cannot get permission from anybody to promote them.
And the South Sudanese president, Salva Kiir, nominates three generals facing UN sanctions to top jobs in the army. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Founder of the Cameroonian main opposition party, the Social Democratic Front, or SDF, has called on the Secretary General of the Commonwealth to put pressure on President Paul Biya to resolve the ongoing Anglophone crisis. John Fru Indi says it is regrettable that the administration in Yaoundé will declare a full-scale war on citizens instead of engaging in dialogue to resolve the crisis. His comments came after Patricia Scotland, Secretary General of the Commonwealth, began a five-day working visit to the country Friday. She has called on the government and all other stakeholders to use constructive dialogue to settle the crisis and to end the violence. For reaction, I read John Fruindi in the English-speaking city of Bamenda.
If she's coming to look into the Anglophone crisis, I will beg with all due respect to say that the Anglophone crisis in the north and southwest, where up to now that I'm talking to you, they're killing people. Mr. Biya waged a war against his own people. And I could have loved that the stakeholders in the northwest harvest should be informed, should be involved, should meet the Secretary General for her to know from them what the situation is. If she goes to Yaoundé, it's just the white-collar type of dressing that will sit them, give concluded statements to the press to say they visited, they talked, and they recommended dialogue, and off they go.
But she's there as part of the effort to try to resolve the Anglophone crisis, where there have been incidents of clashes and attacks by so-called secessionists who have attacked security operatives who are doing their job as the Constitution demands.
Excuse me, sir. If she comes to look into the Anglophone crisis, as I've said, she should come to the north. If the people are attacking, the attacks are taking place in Malfe and a part of the southwest and remote part of the northwest. It's not all of northwest that they're attacking. Even if the attacking officials come, they should be protected to go to the field and find out from the people who are involved, who are being killed, who are facing the pinch. When they talk of secessionists, people wanted to talk with Mr. Biya. He instead said that they should arrest them, the teachers and the lawyers. And when the two went on the run, the others got angry and were throwing stones. Instead of resolving the issue to find out why they're throwing stones, they shot and killed. That's why these boys now resort to them guns. When we talk of secessionists, it's Mr. Biya that has seceded from Cameroon. It's not the Anglophones. The Anglophones came into a unity in good faith. But the Francophones, under the leadership of Mr. Biya in particular, took him in bad faith. And they took us as hewers of wood and carriers of water.
But Mr. Fruindi, some are saying that the SDF, a party that you founded, has not played a critical role in fostering dialogue to resolve this crisis. And this is degenerating into violence, where even a Nigerian official had to come in because the government of Cameroon said that some of these secessionists are training in Nigeria to come and attack the country.
Yeah, they always accuse Nigeria, sir. Because in the early good days, they accused people that I escaped to Nigeria, whereas I was here. They've abused me that I'm a dear friend of the Nigerian origin, which we took it. They've called us dogs and cats and frogs and rats and everything. We're taking it. It's they who are giving the dog a bad name to chain it, not that the Anglophones are bad. Anglophones are some of the most peace-loving citizens of this country, and the Anglophones fought very hard for the reunification. And today, if they're being taken as slaves, beaten, shot at, killed, and again being called secessionists, I don't know what we're talking about.
Government officials are saying several weapons and propaganda items have been seized from the hands of secessionists, including 26 shotguns, several ammunition, a laptop, communications equipment, and T-shirts in the colors of the so-called Ambazonia Defense Forces. What is your party doing about this issue of arms?
My party has condemned the killing on both sides. My party has condemned all that is going wrong. Ask any Cameroonian and ask anybody in Kabila's government whether from the beginning of this thing, Kabila has ever sat down to talk with me. And these are issues affecting my own area of origin, where he knows that I've always won my election to even beat him in his own fief. Has he ever spoken to me? Has he ever found out for me? Have we ever sat on the table to say, what do we do? Despite the fact that I've met some of his top officials, send word to him through them, try to talk to him, he'll not open up. So I think that they have a certain act to bear with the Anglophones, and that's why the boys have gotten angry and they're taking it the way they're taking it. If you imagine that children are now prepared to face the Kalashnikov AK-47 guns with all the bricks, with just stones, you understand what it means. When they tell you today that they see guns and all the like, they can also pack their own old equipment, make pictures to tell you that these are things they see. In fact, I'm told that some of the boys killed some of the members of the armed forces and their guns, and that's what they're using. But they tell you that they are bringing guns and the Anglophones have bought guns. They bought guns from where? The International Convention make it difficult for people just to buy guns anyhow.
John Fruindi is the founder of the Cameroonian main opposition party, the SDF. He spoke with me from Bamenda. The multinational joint task force fighting the Boko Haram insurgency in Cameroon, Chad, and Nigeria says it will hold some 200 former terrorists until Cameroon can construct a rehabilitation center where they will be socially integrated before they returning to their communities. The ex-terrorists are currently at the barracks of the multidimensional joint task force in Mora on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, from where Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports.
Boko Haram, tu auras de mes nouvelles. Boko a touché mes parents sans me demander.
Soldiers of the Mora camp of the multinational joint task force fighting Boko Haram sing what is now their regular song after a successful operation. They have just returned from the border with Nigeria with 12 fighters whom they say handed themselves over to the military. Among them is Sule Bupabga, a 22-year-old Nigerian.
My village is Sandawajiri, Kete, the Kirawa, and the Kwepe.
He says his wish is to return to his village at Sandawajiri near Kirawa in Nigeria, and that he regrets all the killings even though they were forced to carry them out. He says what he did was not good. There are nearly 200 former fighters detained in the camp. Some were arrested during fighting and others handed themselves over to the military. K. Cameroonian ex-fighter, 26-year-old Guma Wamwa, says he decided to report to the military after he escaped from a Boko Haram training camp in the Nigerian border town of Gamburu, but was barred from entering his village in the Cameroon town of Kolofata. He says he escaped from a Boko Haram camp with a motorcycle he was given to monitor and report to his former superiors each time a suspected group of people or a strange vehicle was seen approaching. Mijiyawa Bakari, governor of Cameroon's far north region, says the government will continue to protect the ex-fighters. He says they have secured land in the border town of Meme, where all former fighters will be assisted in reintegrating to society. He says the ex-fighters have committed to assist the military in bringing back their peers who are still either hiding in the bush because they are afraid of the military or are still under Boko Haram control. 200 other former Boko Haram fighters are taken care of in the Mozogo Local Council by the governments of Cameroon and UN agencies. Their relatives are not ready to accept them in their villages for fear they may once again be infiltrated by the terrorists. The population says some of them may be spies or have been brainwashed with Boko Haram ideology. Moki, Edwin Kinzuka, for VOA News, Mora, Northern Cameroon.
A decision by the Nigerian Law School authorities to refuse to call to the bar a Muslim law graduate is generating controversy. Amasa Fidaus, who graduated from Ilorin University, was denied entry to the hall for the ceremony in the capital Abuja. It came after Ms. Fidaus maintained she would wear the wig on top of her hijab, but the authorities said it was a violation of the law school's dress code. A cross-section of Nigerian supporters on social media condemned the decision not to call Fidaus to the bar, adding that her fundamental human right of speech and religion, guaranteed by the Constitution, has been violated. Her critics, however, say she should follow the dress code of the school, just like all the other students. For analysis, I reached attorney and human rights activist Dr. Mayinasera Ibrahim in Abuja.
Going by that insistence that she wants to do it in accordance with the Islamic code, she is right as guaranteed by the Constitution regarding the right of religion. Now, going again by the law school authorities that says he cannot be called to the bar on account of that, the law school may have right, but it's a limited right. Because Section 2 of the Constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria clearly says that any law that is in conflict or that is inconsistent with the provisions of the Constitution, to the extent of the ambiguity of such a law, is null and void and of no effect. So going by this provision, then whatever regulation the law school will bring is null and void and of no effect because it is in contravention of the right, fundamental right to practice religion.
Barrister Ibrahim, looking at this, you talked about the law school having limited scope by which they can enforce this law. Some people are saying, ordinary Nigerians are saying, Amasa Fidaus' fundamental rights were violated by the school since she just met every requirement. Her dress code is up to her and that this is being violated. Do you share that sentiment?
Well, I wouldn't like a situation whereby people will capitulate the issue of the sentiments beyond the particular happening. You understand? Like what some of the religious leaders are saying that religious rights of the Muslims are constantly being violated, I do not share that sentiment. My position is restricted to the issue of this young lady. It is a simple matter of education for people to understand where one right ends and where the limitation of one right is restricted. The fundamental thing is she has passed the examinations and throughout her stay in the law school, her characters and conducts had never been found wanting. One of the principal requirements is 40% attendance of class tutorials or class lectures, which she has satisfied that. So So fundamentally, there is no reason whatsoever why the law school certificate shouldn't be released. After all, before you give the call to bar, the names of all those successful candidates have been assembled in a compendium of book, and all their certificates have already been printed. So there is no reason whatsoever. The law school authority should be educated enough, should be educated, or leaders should educate them for them to understand the conceptual meaning of Islam. Islam is a totality of religion of one, and then fundamental right to practice religion. If truly we mean it, ipso saxo, as per the provisions of the Constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, as per the guarantee of the right of religion, is to be really adhered to.
How do you resolve such an issue with this mixed reaction is generating across Nigeria and beyond?
The way we should react to that issue is to go back to the same Constitution. The Constitution has provided irrevocable panacea. If you look at sections 23 of the Constitution, it says that there is an imposing obligation on the citizens to respect constituted authority. Section 23 talks about that, and Section 15 also of the Constitution talks about, especially 15.4, talks about the obligation on the citizens to respect constituted authorities. So going by that, it shouldn't be something that should be taken confrontational. Rather, there is no issue in the world that cannot be solved amicably through dialogue and explanation. The persons that must have acted that way, both the jail and the distance, because entering into the examination world without a hijab, I don't see any way it will imprint on her right to religion.
It appears the school is having bad publicity with this decision. Some people are saying that for the school to come out in such a manner, it becomes a conflict between the school and some, why by extension, religion, which some people frown upon, that this should have been handled amicably. What do you say to that?
I'm totally an opposer to people, proponents of such idea. I totally reject that idea. It is completely wrong, because it's an institution where there are Muslims, there are Christians, there are even believers of non-religion at the law school. A law school is somewhere where ethics of professional conduct are normally trained. As a matter of fact, those regulations you are seeing are extrapolations from the regulations provided by the Legal Practitioners Act and jealously being guided by the Council of Legal Education. So I don't want people to jettison it to trivialities of religious bigotry. I reject that one. I don't subscribe to that.
Dr. Mayenasera Ibrahim is a Nigerian human rights activist and a lawyer. He spoke with me from Abuja. South Sudanese President Salva Kiir has nominated three generals facing UN sanctions to top jobs in the army. The generals face UN sanctions over alleged violations during a four-year-old civil war. This led the Security Council to impose travel bans and asset freezes on the three generals in 2015. In a reaction to the appointment, Human Rights Watch described the move as a slap in the face of justice and a slap in the face of the international community. But Atteni Wekateni, spokesman for President Salva Kiir, told me the three high-ranking generals are good officers who had been falsely accused for defending themselves in combat.
Well, it was a routine military promotion. First, the three former deputy chief of general staff have been there for 6 years. So their removal was overdue, and they are not complaining, because General Malik Ruben Riak, who was actually former chief of defense force, former deputy chief of defense force, and an inspector general of the army, and Mangar Buang was also the deputy chief of defense force for administration and finance. And Dr. Malwalayom was also a deputy chief of defense force for training and intelligence.
Why these three? They are currently under UN sanctions. They are facing UN sanctions over allegations of violations during the civil war.
I think, they are unfairly accused. Their accusations was based on unfounded allegations. The three were commanders of divisions of government that were forced to fight for self-defense. By sanctioning them based on unfounded stories, cannot let their hard-working achievement just go away, you know, overnight. These are the SPLA soldiers. They fought for liberation, and therefore they are within the leadership of the Sudan People's Liberation Army. We cannot take permission from anybody to promote them.
The government, I understand, has not investigated independently to verify the authenticity of these allegations against these three military officers. So how do you say these allegations are unfounded when the government has yet to investigate thoroughly to come up with a position on that?
No, we know that the allegations are completely unfounded, and we know it because these are the officers that have been in the SPLA for a very long time, since 1983. We know them, we know their record. You know, nobody can speak for us about them because we know them better than those who want to speak about them. The truth of the matter is that when they were accused falsely, and this is not anything that the government of South Sudan can adopt to, because it is made by our detractors. It is the detractors that presented a case that was believed by certain people who think that they should sanction them.
Some people are saying that the appointment or their nomination to this new positions is a slap in the face of justice and a slap in the face of the international community, of which your government frequently or routinely seeks help from. What do you say to that?
Anybody is entitled to a say, whether supporters or detractors. They are entitled to a say in a given position. So I don't disagree very much with those who wanted to say something, because it is their right to do so. But as it is our right also to be heard, these are one of the very disciplined commanders. There is nothing slap of the face of justice here, because they have not committed any crime. The allegation was unfounded against them. And therefore, the appointment or the promotion they got is their entitlement as part of the establishment of the Sudan People's Liberation Army. And whoever speaks about slap of justice, is the slap in the face of justice, is a detractor, and is only, interested to see South Sudan, becoming a country that has no law and order. There's no any country in the whole earth that there's no any government that cannot defend its sovereignty. And these are generals who were forced to go into war by those who were attacking them. How do you expect somebody who has been attacked, to refrain from self-defense in the interest of justice that is not forthcoming, if the justice is coming from outside the country?
Atain Wekatain is the spokesman for the South Sudanese President. Salva Kiir spoke with me from the capital, Juba.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them.
At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, music from our African collection, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. But first, critics accuse a new non-profit organization, Foundation for a Smoke-Free World, of acting as a smokescreen for Big Tobacco, a charge vigorously denied by the foundation's president. For VOA, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva on the controversy swirling around this new venture, which is being subsidized by a $1 billion grant from tobacco giant Philip Morris.
The president of the Foundation for a Smoke-Free World, Derek Yak, was one of the architects of the World Health Organization's Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. He says the convention is successful in preventing people from smoking and in slowing the increase of smoking in children. But he says it focuses little attention on trying to get the world's billion smokers to quit the deadly habit.
To actually accelerate a decline in the billion smokers, we needed to have better cessation, harm reduction, and better product regulation. And I think those elements, I don't think, have got the energy that we actually require.
Yak says more than 7 million people globally die prematurely each year from tobacco. He tells VOA the foundation's mission is to wean smokers away from their addiction by using new harm reduction tools such as e-cigarettes and vaping. Philip Morris International plans to contribute about $80 million a year to the foundation over the next 12 years. Yak assures VOA stringent safeguards are in place to insulate his foundation from the influence of the tobacco industry. Philip Morris is a producer of an e-cigarette-type product. Vice President of Communications at the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, Vince Wildmore, tells VOA the alliance between the foundation and Philip Morris has no credibility.
This foundation is really a smokescreen designed to promote Philip Morris's business interest and to undermine real efforts to reduce the death and disease caused by tobacco use around the world. It's hard to take Philip Morris seriously that they want a smoke-free world when they're marketing cigarettes as aggressively as ever and they're fighting real solutions to reduce smoking.
The World Health Organization also calls into question the work of the foundation. It notes that the number of clear conflicts of interest involved with a tobacco company funding a purported health foundation is evident. In a statement, WHO says it will not partner with the foundation and urges governments and the public health community to disassociate themselves as well. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Sunday on Nightline Africa, this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Mtoto jojo, siyo robot Chumbani bingiri bingiri samba sot
Unante kenyaga ukinyonga sarume
Unante kenyaga ukinyonga
Unante kenyaga ukinyonga kweri
Unante kenyaga ukinyonga
Orera bakuruba Orera ngame Orera nazariwa Orera ngame
Utamkolea aprokoto Tingali tingali ngani kwa moto Utamnyongea msokoto Sumo kali kama koboko
Mapenzi ananipa shida
Shida mama
Nidonde lisuko na tiba
Tiba kwana
Usijepe mi
Kanicharanga
Kanichambua moyo
yo kakaranga. Me baby, when I'm someone that was singing and getting ganganga. Unante kinyaga kinyonga sarume.
Unante kinyaga kinyonga.
Unante kinyaga kinyonga kweri.
Unante kinyaga kinyonga.
Orera bakuru ban. Orera ngambe. Orera nazari ban. Orera ngambe.
Mwenza konyanga. Simamie kama kangaru, ibane kangwaru, babu juma mpige kwa kwaru, kwa kwaru, kwa
asa chumbua kama karanga sasa,
chumbua kama karanga,
ichumbue kama karanga sarome,
chumbua kama karanga,
asa washa, washa, moto washa, washa, songa, songa, uga songa, songa, pakaji, eji, pakaji.
When you weave for a genuine get low,
when you weave for a genuine,
oh, when you weave for a genuine get sala,
when you weave for a genuine,
when you weave for a genuine get query,
when you weave for a genuine,
oh, when you weave for a genuine get sala,
when you weave for a genuine,
wanakodoa,
wanakodoa,
macho kodo,
wanakodoa, wanakodoa,
wale kodo.
Wanakodoa, kodo, wanakodoa,
ukinyonga.
follow you. Brother, follow you. Cause I'm in love with you. Money follow you. Banana follow you. Paparazzi follow you. Cause I'm in love with you. Are you done talking? Tell me, baby, are you done talking? Yeah. Are you done talking? Tell me, baby, are you done talking? Yeah. Are you done talking? Tell me, baby, are you done talking? Yeah. Are you done talking? Tell me, baby, are you done talking? Yeah. I don't wanna be a player no more. Yeah. I don't wanna be a player no more. Cause my guys call me Cristiano, Mr. Ronaldo. I'm in love with you. Money fall on you. Banana fall on you. Paparazzi follow you. Cause I'm in love with you.
If I offend you,
if I offend you, because sorry, your baby, take a toe. Sorry, your baby, take a toe.
I'm in love with you.
I'm in love with you. Oh, baby, nothing of it to change amo. Nothing of it to change amo.
If I talk, then go say I dey talk. Hey, tell me why then they use Panadol for our headache.
Yeah,
how I go chop if my baby no chop? They want to spoil our market. Yeah,
I don't wanna be a player no more. Yeah, I don't wanna be a player no more.
Cause my guys call me Cristiano, Mr. Ronaldo. I'm in love with you. Money fall on you. Banana fall on you. Paparazzi follow you. Cause I'm in love with you.
If I offend you,
if I offend you, because sorry, your baby, take a toe. Sorry, your baby, take a toe.
I'm in love with you.
I'm in love with you. Baby, nothing of it to change amo. Nothing of it to change amo.
Biddle, biddle, you drive me crazy. Biddle, biddle, my love.
Untala, biddle, biddle.
Yo, 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 yo,
Baby, you turn down the soda. You swag and shake in your shoulder. And you know, I enjoy your presence, you know. You know, you know. Ay, 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 ay. Oba one and funes on you. Oba one and zida maziga. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
Baby Kea, baby super, nasi tima ye guanjakira. Baby Kea, baby super, waka bintu ni lingala.
Runja chirenku, gondanga kapiro, tuntana miro miro, nange miro miro. Runja chirenku, gondanga kapiro, tuntana miro miro.
Sunday Music Spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's One Man's Point of View with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. In the course of the last 12 months, this commentator has been presenting an early warning to a potential crisis in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC. The purpose was to allow the African Union or the Security Council to take action to prevent what could be a serious civil conflict in the country. The problem is that the supporters of President Joseph Kabila and himself, perhaps, came to the decision that they want to prolong his presidency without doing a change of the constitution for a third term. So they designed a devious plan. And the first act of that plan was to approach the constitutional court and to pose the question as to what would happen should elections not be held in 2016. The court decided that if there were no elections, the president would have to continue to avoid a political vacuum. Then they decided to manipulate the Electoral Commission of the DRC by not providing enough funds for the elections in 2016. Accordingly, the Electoral Commission announced that it could not hold election in 2016. And then, following using the court's ruling, saying that President Kabila would continue. This, of course, provoked serious crisis with the opposition. There were shootings and fightings, and many lives were lost. The Roman Catholic Church intervened and brokered an agreement. It was a real good agreement, given the circumstances. It provided for a transition period in 2017 and the acknowledgement that President Kabila would not stand for election at the end of that transition period. It was also agreed that the Prime Minister of the DRC would be nominated by the opposition in the DRC. But as has always happened in the past, the Kabila government and its supporters did not comply with the agreement in full. They selected a compliant prime minister which was not the candidate of the opposition. And now we are coming to the end of 2017, and the Electoral Commission, again unprompted, is saying that elections would not be held until 2018, with no indications that Kabila would not stand. Now, a senior British official last week raised the same alarm this commentator has been raising for the last 12 months, and is calling on the international community not to accept this trickery being played in the DRC because of the dangers ahead. Regrettably, the African Union has not done much to tackle this problem of the DRC. And when one listens to the information minister of the DRC, you could see that they do not understand the grave dangers ahead. Throughout Africa, we are seeing changes taking place. For example, yesterday, the South African ANC began its Congress, which will last for 5 days, to select the new leader of the ANC. Regrettably also, in Burundi, we are now seeing a move for a third term of the government. It is time for the African Union to be more attentive to some of these changes that are taking place in the African continent. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sale, reporter and producer Douglas Mpuga, and our engineer for today, Nick Ivanov, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, where you will sit when you are old shows where you stood in youth. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In Syria and Iraq, ISIS will soon be history. But even as it struggles to stay alive and relevant,
it is critical that it not be allowed to regroup and flourish elsewhere. Terrorist groups with safe haven are able to export their violence around the world, striking our homeland and those of our closest allies. We saw al-Qaeda do this from Afghanistan in the 1990s through 9/11. More recently, we saw ISIS do the same from Iraq and Syria, said Ambassador at Large and Coordinator for Counterterrorism Nathan Sales before a Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee recently. For that reason, the United States is working with partners in North Africa in order to deny terrorists the ability to operate in the continent's vast spaces where government reach is lacking. To mitigate the threat posed by terrorist groups in North Africa, we are helping fragile states build capacity, as well as leveraging highly capable states' counterterrorism expertise. We want to develop our African partners' counterterrorism capabilities to a point where they need not rely on assistance from the United States to defend themselves, said Ambassador Sales. The United States works with its partner states to improve their ability to investigate, prosecute, and adjudicate terrorism crimes. To stop terrorist travel, we are focusing on improving border security through information sharing at international borders, particularly with regard to known and suspected terrorists. Our efforts to prevent radicalization and recruitment of individuals into terrorist groups include delegitimizing the violent ideology they espouse. Countering radicalization in a way that is tailored to each North African country is another critical component of a comprehensive approach to counterterrorism, said Ambassador Sales. We undertake these efforts in cooperation with European allies, other key partners, and multilateral institutions to amplify their impact. The United States uses a range of tools and resources and works closely with the governments of North Africa and other partners to comprehensively address terrorism, said Ambassador Sales. Our training and resources are directly assisting partners to disrupt terrorist operations, prosecute terrorist suspects, and protect borders.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.